Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights-on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set
the
them free.
Devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Jim Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse in your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Well, I've got quite a stack of items in front of me today, but before I get started, I want to offer condolence to all the friends and especially the bereaved family of Specialist Alvarez, a true Santa Marian hero. Specialist Alvarez was killed in combat last week, a 2009 graduate from Delta High School. I can see the school from the windows of my home office. The flag with our hearts lowered to half-mast. All who knew him will miss him. It's hard not to think of our own boy, Zachary, who survived his deployment to Afghanistan there at Fort Tilghman for a year. And his mother and I still remember the long periods of blackouts when he would be under attack and communication was cut off. So to all of you parents whose children have taken your heart with them into battle for the preservation of our liberties, thank you. Keep the faith. Hoorah. And I guess the only way to follow up on that would be to take a look at developments that may well lead to our engagement in Syria. Are we following a master plan created by the architects of our military policy to finally surround and isolate Iran? You know, a master plan, perhaps drawn up by military strategists or begun to be drawn up by military strategists as far back as the Carter days, brought out and put into implementation during the Reagan days, no doubt, and began execution during Bush, you know, with a coalition of odd couple parties, including nationalists, globalists, Zionists, Jesuits, capitalists, all orchestrated by an overarching divine providence, perhaps, tending all of these events toward the fulfillment of end-time prophecy. But you know, the antics of our current commander-in-chief are really embarrassing. He draws a red line, right? When asked what would precipitate U.S. involvement in the mass killings of civilians in Syria, he says the red line would be use of chemical weapons. If you remember my commentary on that a while back, I said that was a stupid and loose thing to say. I mean, for all sorts of reasons. All he should have said was something to the effect that we're deeply distressed by Assad's disrespect for life. And in my opinion, I believe he should have thrown his support behind the freedom fighters with the caveat that if they are found to be truly fighting for genuine freedom reforms. But our president equivocated in crawfish, and I think he figured Assad would not use chemical weapons, remembering perhaps what happened to Hussein. You know, not Barack, but Saddam Hussein. Another reason it was dumb was that it set us up, my friend. I mean, who following the developments in Syria does not know that Al-Qaeda has co-opted the rebellion? The FSA, or Free Syrian Army, is pretty much run now. Actually, it's completely run by Al-Qaeda. As of August 5th this year, Al-Qaeda forces have taken the, quote, key northern Syrian air base of Minak. And by the way, these are Russian-speaking Al-Qaeda fighters who have been terrorizing Russian targets up till recently. A number of, quote, high-profile Al-Qaeda operatives, end quote, in southern Russia have been urging their leaders to pull their men out of Syria, to refocus on Russian targets, hoping to disrupt the coming Winter Olympic Games, by the way, scheduled to take place there. So Russia is strongly supporting oil-supplying Assad in his fight against the Russian Chechen terrorists. You beginning to see the picture? Here, let me adjust the lens a bit. Yeah, there you go. Russia is making very loud sounds of protest against any American intervention in Syria that would target Assad, for the obvious reason that Syria is a major supplier of oil to Russia, but also because Assad is under attack by Russian-based Islamist terrorists who have been terrorizing the Russian government. Do you suppose Putin does not have an interest in seeing Syria come under the control of Russian-speaking Chechen terrorists? Anyway, by the way, remember the Boston Marathon terrorist attack? Perpetrated by Russian-speaking Islamist jihadists, Chechens, oh yeah, the same group attacking Syria right now, same group attempting to manipulate the United States into taking their side against Assad? What do you think the odds are of that? Not far from the strategically important Syrian air base that the Chechens have recently occupied, the Syrian army and Hezbollah are massing their troops, preparing to drive them out and retake the air base. Now, there you go. You got Hezbollah and the Syrian army, avowed enemies of America, dedicated to killing as many Americans as possible, committed to the ultimate destruction of America, massing in Aleppo, preparing to attack the airbase controlled by Al-Qaeda jihadists dedicated to killing Americans, committed to the ultimate destruction of America. Are you following this? Now, Russia has a clear national interest in supporting Assad in the conflict, which does not say a lot for their friendship with us now, does it? But at least it's not hard to see the national interest that motivates Russia's position in the situation. Then you have our part. We have zero national interest in the region beyond our concern for the killing of civilians going on in that civil war. Unless, as I pointed out earlier, there is a military strategist's master plan by which we are working towards surrounding Iran with U.S. military outposts, anticipating a major war with them. But then we have the current U.S. president, who is likely not even privy to such a plan, if it does exist, and whose personal motivations are very simple. Really, Obama's not really a very complex man. He basically motivated by what he can say in the moment that would make him look good. No, not what he can do that would make him look good, but what he could say in the moment. Because the words don't mean anything more to him than window dressing for how he appears to others. You know, what would make him look good to his constituency? Make no mistake, Obama always plays to his audience. He has a pretty clear idea, a profile of who his audience is. So what could he say about a year ago when he was asked what would precipitate U.S. involvement in Syria? Obama used the expression red line. He said use of chemical weapons would cross a red line for him. And everyone assumed he meant what everyone would assume that he meant. In the context of that question, that he would consider the use of chemical weapons as precipitating direct U.S. involvement or military intervention in the Syrian civil war. You know, over 100,000 civilians have been killed already, by some estimates. Why would the use of chemical weapons cross a red line? Now, I get it. We don't want to encourage the militarization of chemical weapons for general use in conventional warfare. Brings to mind, does it not, that scene in Princess Bride, one of my favorite movies, you know, where Wesley meets the giant Fezzik, and Fezzik has a huge rock in his hand, and Wesley is holding his sword. Now, Fezzik is under orders, of course, to kill Wesley, but he does not believe it's very sporting to kill him with a rock, and so he suggests they each lay down their weapons and do it as God intended, you know. And Wesley observes something to the effect, you mean you put down your rock, and I put down my sword, and we attempt to kill each other like civilized people? Besides, isn't napalm a chemical weapon? Well, truth is, that's debated. The chemical used in these bombs is not what produces the death affected by the bomb. And so there's some dispute. While Britain signed on to the 1980 convention prohibiting the use of napalm, the United States proscribes their use only where civilians might be impacted. And remember the militarized use of Agent Orange? Now, I can't find any place where that has been categorically prohibited for future use in warfare. I did not have time to run it to ground, as they say, but I did do a quick search, and I could find no mention of U.S. policy prohibiting its use. In any event, the point is this. The wholesale intentional murder of masses of civilians, a la Rwanda, you know, whether by machete or mustard gas or sarin, for that matter, whenever any regime targets civilians, well, I think they've crossed a line that divides military action from terrorist action, so far as I'm concerned. And yet, does that constitute a red line that requires the United States to intervene in a civil war, where the biggest problem for us is choosing sides, and where there is a very real reason to suspect we are being manipulated by either side to enter in on behalf of one or the other, for that matter? I mean, which side do we take? Who is killing the civilians? Of course, not Al-Qaeda, right? Now, they wouldn't put civilian lives at stake in their efforts. You understand? I just viewed a video of an FSA, that's a Free Syrian Army insurgent, Chechen, by the way, Al-Qaeda soldier, standing over a dead Syrian soldier, cutting out his heart and eating it, videoed purposely to send a message that this is what's going to happen to all supporters of Assad the dog. And so I ask you, you've got Assad the dog on one side, a miserable skunk of a man by any rational assessment, and then you've got Al-Qaeda on the other hand. And you're supposed to choose sides in this conflict? And then on top of that, the intel you're asked to use is iffy at best? So that all they could say at best is that Obama is very sure? I mean, how do we know whether the sarin was used by Assad or some renegade in his army trying to instigate things or draw America in, or by some heart-eating insurgent? You see, one question clouds this whole business. What possible benefit is it to Assad to deliberately provoke the United States, or the rest of the international community for that matter, to step in on the side of his enemies when he's already hip deep in trouble? You know, Assad wants to open up to UN inspectors now. He claims he's not responsible for the atrocity. He claims the insurgents did it. So what do we have? Assad the dog attempting to frame the Free Syrian Army? Or do we have Al-Qaeda, who now runs the Free Syrian Army, attempting to frame Assad? Or is it some crazy loose cannon within the Assad regime trying to draw us in? Look, no worries, my friend. Obama's pretty sure that Assad is the one who authorized the use of chemical weapons. He's pretty sure. Can you believe this? And these guys criticize Bush? And as for the UN inspectors asking for time to complete their study? What? He's been calling for that all along, and now he gets it. He says, nope, no need to wait for that. Too late for that. Is it? Obama, it's just a weird situation. And these are the people who criticize Bush. Obama's talking about going it alone now, you know, with Britain backing out, France beginning to flinch, Russia stomping their feet in protest against us entering into this, China being characteristically quiet so far, and Obama talking things over with Putin, and we all wonder why Obama is all hot to enter into Syria. And it's feared that it's because he wants to save face, not for America, for himself. He's never cared about saving face for this country. He's thrown America under the Islamist bus time and again. He has openly gone about shaming America publicly and internationally and the military. No, only one thing motivates this fella. It's his own ego. He's not motivated to act to protect American interests from shame. He's concerned about his own prestige. He's afraid of losing face before the world. His own face, not America's face. He's being openly ridiculed for the way he has botched foreign affairs. He's being openly challenged by several who are motivated to provoke him to go it alone in Syria and to order a missile attack on Assad, an attack that at best will do nothing but help Al-Qaeda take over in Syria. So I ask you, are we about to get dragged into yet another war in the Middle East? Is Obama going to manipulate the rules, play loose with the Constitution as he does almost routinely, and launch us into Syria on the side of Al-Qaeda? Why is it that Obama seems always to equivocate and crawfish in these situations, hesitating, deliberating, until it becomes clear the Islamists, such as the Muslim Brotherhood, or in this case Al-Qaeda, are going to benefit from any help we render? Anyway, on another level, is this all a part of some grand strategic operation aimed at finally and fully addressing the Middle East issue, which I believe biblical prophecy says is going to happen? Are we following a master plan that began development by military strategists as far back as Carter, brought into and put into implementation during Reagan, and began execution by Bush? And is there evidence of an overarching divine providence behind the scenes, weaving these varied and sometimes conflicting human machinations and agendas toward the fulfillment of end-time prophecy? You know, as I conclude, consider the prophet Isaiah did prophesy concerning Syria and Israel in Isaiah chapters 9 and 17, and the prophetic context of Isaiah 9 is defined in verses 1 through 6. It is the time of the birth of the promised Messiah. Isaiah 9:6 is the famous Christmas verse, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder," and so on. Well, in this chapter, at verse 12, the prophet declares that Israel will be devoured by Syria before and Philistia behind. Now, Syria is easy for us to identify, but Philistia, it's a bit more bleak. It refers to the anti-Semitic inhabitants of Palestine. Now, we've seen this prophecy fulfilled. Syria has devoured what was known as Israel, and today it holds its ancient capital, Damascus. Now, in case you think, oh, no, Jerusalem's the capital of Israel. Well, I gotta bring you up to speed on your Israeli history. Remember, after Solomon died, the nation was divided into north and south. The northern kingdom was called Israel and consisted of 10 tribes, and Damascus was made the capital. The southern kingdom consisted of Judah and Benjamin and was called Judah, and the capital there continued to be Jerusalem. And interestingly, as an aside, the division of the kingdom was over a question of oppressive taxation. Did you know that? And that increasing oppressive taxation followed a time during which the kingdom drifted away from the one true God and began embracing Baalism, or the worship of the desert gods, among whom today is Allah. Today, the Syrians continue to hold the land that once belonged to Israel and the capital city, Damascus. And the anti-Semitic Palestinians, Philistia, have controlled all of Jerusalem for a long time, until about 1948, I believe it was 1948, where the Jews were given a homeland within the boundaries of their ancient promised land. Yet Philistia continues to vie for control of Jerusalem. Indeed, Syria and Philistia have devoured Israel, and to this day they continue to harass the Jews with, quote, open mouth, end quote, Isaiah 9:12. Later in Isaiah's prophecy, you go to chapter 17 now, he declares the formal burden of Damascus, and that's biblical language for a declaration of God's word against a city or a people. He proclaimed that Damascus would be utterly destroyed. Quote, "The burden of Damascus, behold, Damascus is taken away from being a city, and it shall be a ruinous heap," end quote. And then according to verse 3, "the kingdom will cease from Damascus," and that suggests it will no longer be regarded as a capital city. Now, some believe this happened under the attack of Tiglath-Pileser, who did conquer Syria, but Damascus continued to be known as a city and continued to be the capital of Assyrian kingdom. For this reason, many of us believe there is a still future fulfillment of the prophecy. Anyway, many events we see today involve the very same nations that are prominently spoken of in Scripture. Now, will Obama attack Syria and destroy Damascus? Frankly, that does not seem likely to me. Nevertheless, we see history shaping up in exactly the way Scripture predicted it would over 1,700 years ago by the prophet Isaiah. I've got a little long in this segment. I'll speak to this more fully Sunday night. So come on by the Lighthouse Sunday night at 6 p.m. Hold on through the break. I'll be right back.
Folks, I've gone a bit long in this segment. We're going to skip the break and just roll right along.
Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about to blow your...
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, Brain Masseur, Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church above every arch, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. In the last segment, I addressed the recent interest Obama seems to have in attacking Syria. You see, the lefty is all out there beating their war drum against Syria and using almost the exact same rhetoric Bush used, and yet they don't seem to flinch with any embarrassment of their hypocrisy. When is Obama going to issue a public apology to President Bush? Here you go. Liberals refer to the conservatives and the GOP as the Armageddon Caucus. And this is really cute. Right next to this headline in this advertisement in this liberal e-newsletter, you see an ad titled, The Carbon Bomb. Does anyone need me to list the various egregious doom and gloom propaganda the left has used over the last 15 years or more? Grandma will be forced to live on dog food. Conservatives want everyone to die of air pollution. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. The Armageddon Caucus has been alive and well on the left for decades. Here's a rule you can depend on, my friends. Anytime liberals are harping loudly with outrage about something conservatives are doing, mark it down, it's exactly what they are doing. So Hassan was sentenced to death for the Fort Hood shooting. Excellent. However, who was that Islamist radical that was convicted and sentenced to death about 10 years ago or so, who is still working the system? Milking the system, I should say. You know what? I can't remember the guy's name right now. And I just got a little backed up on my schedule this week and not able to spend as much time in show prep as I usually do. So forgive me, but I don't remember the guy's name. He was a soldier, I remember. He went all jihad while deployed and threw some grenades into some officer's sleeping tents. Killed two, I think. Wounded, I don't know, 30 others, something like that. And in any event, this guy was sentenced to death at least 5 years ago. He's still living off the taxpayer. I wonder how long Hassan's visit to the 72 she-devils of hell will be delayed. And now here you go, bestiality becoming more and more casually mentioned out there and more frequently showing up in news items and so on, as the conscience of many Americans has increasingly become desensitized to that abnormal effrontery to their creator. Unreal. Well, now, hey, look at this. Here's a study that reveals newborns recall words they hear in utero. That's interesting, isn't it? And then here, Ginsburg admits... confesses, I should say boasts, actually, that the Supreme Court is more activist than ever. She congratulates herself that she's had a significant part in changing the constitutional definition of the role of the court to that of legislating her morality. Wow. And then here's Boehner betraying the conservatives on Obamacare again. Why is it that it seems so often when it comes right down to a fight for conservative principles or values in the Congress, the only part of Boehner we see is the back of his yellow jacket? And now this is cue from MSNBC. Only phony Christians oppose Obamacare, end quote. Really? All right, I probably need to do an entire show on exactly why the only response consistent with true Christianity is to oppose government-controlled and government-run health care. And it starts somewhere around this line of thinking. The government is not God. Anyway, I need to conclude the show today with a look at another serious problem. We recently paused to remember Dr. Martin Luther King. The question has been raised whether King would support Obamacare, and I really can't say. All his speeches were aimed at challenging his fellow black Americans to live an honorable, God-fearing life. He aspired his people to be the best they could be at whatever they did, to stand up for their God-given liberty. And I'm confident he would have been disapproving of Obama's methods, if not of his policies. If you compare Obama's message to that of King, it's clear the contrast, is stark indeed. King inspired us all to judge a man not by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character. Obama, on the other hand, is racially myopic. I mean, the man can't see past his own deeply racist bigotry. His myopic racism has created serious brain muscle myopathy. What I'm saying is Obama has great difficulty seeing past the color of someone's skin. Almost every judgment he has expressed has been based almost entirely upon the color of skin, with little or no regard to the content of character. Trayvon Martin being a recent case in point. The question has been raised whether race relations have been improved since Martin Luther King's famous speech. And I would say that overall, certainly they have. But the question now is, have they been improved since Obama was elected? And I'm I'm telling you, I don't think they have. I think he's hurt us. We might ask another question, whether the condition of black Americans has improved since Obama has come into office. I mean, look, the unemployment rate among black Americans is almost 3 times that of the national average. What's that about? I mean, folks, this is bad news. Obama is destroying our economy, and it's hurting all of us, but no one's getting more devastated than our black American friends. Quote, new estimates derived by Centier Research from the Census Bureau's current population survey show that the typical American household's income has dropped more than twice as much during the years of President Obama's recovery as it did during the years of the official recession, end quote. What? Now, folks, in a sane world, this would be proof that the policies of Obama and the Dems, and that's not a new rap group, but it is the group wrapping our economy into the sewer, are failing, increasing the cost of government, and buying off voters with promises kept alive by dribbling teaser amounts to the public. That's a policy destroying our economy and our country. Since the people doing this are, by everyone's account, the most brilliant people in the world, then I'm forced to conclude they're doing it on purpose. Why? Bible thump alert, Bible thump alert. The Obama economy is poking holes in our pockets, my friends. Haggai 1 verse 6, quote, he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes, end quote. And you read the context, what occasioned this judgment? Haggai 1, 2, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say the time has not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built, end quote. Let's return to the house of God. That's the message of our show this year. It's our theme. And build the Lord's house. I mean, whatever Obama's up to notwithstanding, we are under judgment in this country because we have forsaken the house of God. Now, some of you have not honored God with your tithe. Bring you all the tithes in the storehouse. The storehouse is the house of God. Today, it's his church. Obama's policies are targeting our economy for certain destruction. But people just can't see past the color of the guy's skin. It's sad. So how much progress have we made, says Martin Luther King. But perhaps more disturbing is the fact that Obama has probably set race relations way back. I mean, by identifying and sympathizing with the radical element in the struggle for black civil rights, he has, inadvertently perhaps, or perhaps purposely, encouraged the notion that white people have and continue to oppress black people. And whatever unfortunate conditions experienced by blacks, it's all to be blamed upon white people. Now, folks, this argument can't even hold historically, much less in any practical way today. I mean, historically, Islamists have abused human rights, including the use of slavery, as much as anyone else. Now, only a few white Europeans, relatively speaking, participated in black slavery or in the slave trade, and African blacks participated in the slave trade in equal numbers. Oh, yeah. And they enslaved others, by the way. Slavery is a human rights violation, not a white or black rights violation. African blacks have enslaved people. Muslims have enslaved people, and still do in some parts, by the way. Do you want to know the reason European or white slave trade is so pervasively well known, especially in our country, and so documented and so much talked about? It's because your white Europeans hated it and campaigned against it and finally shed their blood to stop it. It was a white European, after all, who said all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And as for immediate context, as for the whites who live in America today, you cannot find one considered sane who endorses the idea of slavery, much less ever participated in it in their entire lives. I dare say you'd be hard-pressed to find very many who have slaveholders anywhere in their genealogy. Slavery is simply not an issue in America today. Quit trying to make it one. There's not one person in America today that can justly be held accountable for it. And yet we've got guys like this Shabazz character who sounds like a radical jihad-headed Muslim, only he's screeching about all white babies and white women and white men to be killed. You probably have seen the video on YouTube. If not, you ought to check it out. He's telling a black audience that they are going to have to kill some crackers, it's a slang term for white man, if they're going to ever be free. Yeah. And this is modern day character here. This is recent. This is contemporary. He's openly calling for the killing of white babies, white women, and white old men. And he's telling his audience the only way the blacks will ever be free is by killing white people. He says he is committed to the killing of all white people and will not rest content until they're all dead. Now, he has an audience of black people listening to this stuff and agreeing with him. You got the late Khalid Muhammad, late leader of the new Black Panther movement, now deceased, but he was saying the same sorts of things during his tenure, and these things continue to be said by current leadership. He explains the rationale for killing white babies and women. He explains that it's necessary to kill the white babies because they are destined to grow up and oppress black people. You see, he explains the rationale for killing white women. You know, every 9 months, they spread their legs and send reinforcements into the world that will oppress black people. That's just kind of, that's the rhetoric he uses. He explains the rationale for killing old white men because, as he explains it, how do you think they became old white men? They did it by oppressing the black man. I mean, folks, it's insane. In fact, it's over the top, so much so that most of us give it very little attention. But
Obama comes along and he expresses a kind of implied sympathy with this mentality. Now, he probably, if pressed, would not agree with the extremism of the rhetoric, but he has sympathy for the racist pain these people feel. He identifies with them, relates to them. He understands how the guilt for these abuses might be stretched out over all whites. Oh, yes, he does. You're not paying attention if you don't think so. He perceives the world in much the same way, which is the reason he's comfortable making appearances at events sponsored by the new Black Panthers, by the way, and why he would direct his Attorney General Holder not to pursue seriously prosecuting those new Black Panthers who were standing in front of a polling place, I believe in Philadelphia, with batons in their hands, dressed in a military-like garb, intimidating white voters as they enter the polls. Look, it is disturbing how Obama quickly takes the racist perspective on anything that happens involving blacks and whites. Take the Trayvon Martin case. Immediately, he identifies the black side of the issue. He does so openly, by the way. I mean, right out loud. He announces his sympathy for Trayvon against Zimmerman before the trial, before he knows what's going on, judging entirely by the color of skin, ignoring altogether the content of the character of either Trayvon or Zimmerman. And he did this earlier when a black professor was questioned by police. Immediately, without knowing any of the particulars, he sided with and sympathized with one side of that issue based entirely upon the color of the individual's skin. Now, we all know of the radicalized element in the black community that are going around calling for white people to be killed. I mentioned a couple of them earlier, and they're not the only ones. Well, now we have a president who repeatedly suggests or implies his own belief in the black versus white dynamic preached by the late Khalid and by the recent recent new Black Panther leadership. He foments this black against white perspective. So you tell me, what are we supposed to make of the recent nonsense regarding Trayvon and the following intensification or escalation of black-on-white crime, where groups of 4 and 5 black youths are ganging up on whites and killing them? You know, did the 4 black kids that recently beat up an 80-year-old white guy, a World War II vet, do it because of hatred for white people fomented by this stuff that's going on? Or was it because, as they said, they were simply bored, had nothing better to do? Really? How about the 5 black girls that beat up a white girl and they use the same explanation, they were just bored? Or the 4 black kids that teamed up to shoot and kill Chris Lane, who said they were bored, just felt like killing someone? Why do they feel like killing somebody? Who's putting that sort of thing in their head? Could it be that these kids hear about a case like Trayvon Martin and receive it through the filter of Sharpton and Jackson, and then their president, Obama, essentially tells them that this is justified, that it was a racist act, that they are justified in their animus against all this? Do you see the influence this has? I was going to play some excerpts of Shabazz and Khalid, but I'm out of time. Perhaps another time. I'll include the audio clips in my gold ambassador packets for this month. And by the way, if you want to be a bronze, silver, or gold ambassador, when you call 888-770-8000 to leave your message lights on or lights off, let me know you're interested, and we'll give you the details about that. Now, I have lit the lamps in the Church of Belfry Arch, and now you let me know if you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000, 1-888-770-8000. And you say lights on if you agree with what I'm saying, lights off if you disagree. And either way, your call is welcome. 1-888-770-8000. When you call, leave your message on our toll-free listener response hotline. And if you'd like, you may contact me by email. Go to thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. And write me a letter as long as you like. You can click lights on or lights off and then send me your note. If you're in a hurry, just click lights on, say send, or just say lights on and hang up. But I want to hear from you. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church. How about joining me for breakfast on October 6th? We'll begin serving at 8:30 a.m. When you come to the door, an usher or one of our hosts or hostesses will greet you. In the course of your introductions, mention you are a listener of the Brain Massage Show, and then say lights on or lights off. That's a secret password to get into the breakfast. You'll be escorted to join me for a nice continental breakfast. And while you're not obliged to stay for the service that follows, I hope you will, and then stand with me among my friends on Friend Day, October the 6th this year. That's October 6th, and we're rolling out the red carpet to all who will be our guests on that Sunday. Plan to come.